Kelman on CliffCentral.com.
Right then, Rainbow 16, what is the state of the Rainbow Nation? Now, I gotta just zoom out for a second here real quick. We did the first Rainbow 16 in January, and it was obviously at the height of the Penny Sparrow, you know, social media furor, and it was on the back of Fees Must Fall towards the end of last year. And today, when I was going through the stuff for the show and I saw it, and I saw that we're going to, you know, cover Roads Must Fall specifically today, there was a part of me that was just like, oh, I don't know if I'm really in the mood for this. And I had to step out of myself and say, you stupid, dumb human being, because this is exactly what we do. We get so attached to something and so invested in something and so impassioned about something. In January, the only thing that we could speak about was racism. And I sat on this microphone and day after day, I said, the most important conversation to have, and we have to keep it going throughout the year. And it's so important. And I will not do anything but speak about this. It's the most important thing. And I actually was very upset with the habit that I'd fallen back into, where today it was just about Justin Bieber's birthday for me.
Yeah.
Because I became the exact person that I was telling everybody not to be. So it is the most important conversation to have. What is the state of the Rainbow Nation? What do we see when we look at someone of a different color? What are these issues of generational wealth? What are these issues of Roads Must Fall, the Fees Must Fall? Because I even also found myself, that when I've been hearing the news reports of what's happening at universities, I'm just like, I'm saying to myself in my head, I'm over it. Like, can they not just go back to class now? Like, did they not?
Mm.
And there's part of me that's like, I'm just such a typical damn human being.
Mm. I mean, look, this is the thing that happens all the time with people who can remove themselves from the situation. And the important thing to note is that while you can, there are a lot of people who can't. Majority of this country can't. So, you know, I mean, it's always easier when you have the privilege to be able to get out of it, to get out of it. But remember, if you commit to this, you commit to it.
This is the thing.
That's the way it goes.
I was that guy. But this is, I mean, I was this kid in school as well. I would sign up and go to the first practice. And then I was like, until that sport was cool again, I would like, this is, and it's so frustrating to me. And that's why I'm glad that we've just got this fixture that we have to discuss it, because there are so many different aspects. And I was so impassioned about the conversations in January, and I was disappointed in myself today. So I'm going to try and redeem myself now.
Okay.
And I want to speak for a second. We're going to touch base in a second with Alicia Dewing, who actually, when we did Rainbow 16, initially when we ran the special, said she really wanted to get involved and carry the conversation through. So that's going to be cool. We'll do that in a few minutes. But the point is to address different aspects of racism in South Africa in 2016. And you cannot talk about what is the state of the Rainbow Nation without speaking about the Roads Must Fall movement, which has been getting a lot of criticism of late. Just let's zoom out on Roads Must Fall. Let's go back to the beginning when it was about a statue and zoom forward to now when it's about a whole lot more than just a statue.
So it was never just about a statue.
Yeah, okay.
Because yes, that was the symbolism. So the Roads Must
Fall. The catalyst.
Yes, and it was because it was a symbol of what anger and
it became
pain
the face, yeah.
was going on actually behind the experiences of black students at the University of Cape Town at the time. And the Roads Must Fall movement, it's very important to understand. I mean, there's so much context to get into consideration, and I urge everybody to please do some reading and do some research on it. But the University of Cape Town is, you know, it's a very big space and bastion of whiteness and white supremacy.
Cape Town is.
And the University of Cape Town itself, as well as the University of Stellenbosch. There's a lot of these places.
It follows that if Cape Town has huge issues with racism, though, that the universities.
So will the universities, right? So it's really important to understand that there are a lot of people who feel that way, and that there are spaces there where people struggle. So when the Roads Must Fall, when the shit being thrown on the statue happened, and then the movement started happening, it wasn't because of a statue first and then it became a movement. It was because it was an underlying pain that was coming out, and that was the first way to address it. And actually not the first way, but that was the biggest way to address it at the time. So we mustn't take these things to think that they are isolated incidents. None of these things happen in isolation. None of these things happen on their own. They're not, it's not just somebody who said, okay, today this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to do this and that's it. It comes from a lot of thought and processing and pain and just understanding who you are and then coming to the realization of what it is that's causing this pain. And one of the biggest things around the Roads Must Fall movement and like what's happening that's really problematic at the moment is you're finding a lot of black people arguing between so-called elite and so-called non-elite, so-called students, so-called old guard. We've got people basically fighting against each other. And on Friday, there was an interview between Nomboniso Gasa, who's a researcher and intellectual and academic, she's been renowned, you know, the world around for having really good academic work and really working to forward, you know, black interests. And then you've got the Roads Must Fall movement, which is seen to be so-called radical, so-called like a new black movement and black fire and black anger and, you know, all of these things that people talk about. So there was a conversation between Nomboniso on Friday on 702, which has given a challenge by the radio station. And Wanelise Xaba, who is one of the members of the Roads Must Fall movement, she's a very vocal activist, and she has been like tweeting and moving through. She does a lot of work in the movement. And so when they had a radio slot, and I don't know if you want to play a bit of it or whatever, but it might take up too much time. But they basically ended up fighting about how the conversation needs to happen. So it started off with Nomboniso saying, you know, I think that, you know, it's important to have this conversation, but just know that if at any point I feel someone is abusing the platform, I will shut down the conversation. And that already tells you that there's someone who already firstly, anticipates a problem between herself and whoever comes onto the show. And then it tells you someone who thinks that they are at liberty to do something like that in the middle of a conversation. Now, conversation is not where one person owns and the other person doesn't. A conversation is never about one person being able to control. A conversation is an exchange of ideas between two or more people. And that's what went wrong there.
Look, I mean, it's like walking into a presidential debate. You know that it's going to get messy, but maybe sometimes you don't immediately at the beginning say it is now going to be messy. And if it gets too messy, X. So maybe walking in there could have been a bit of a different tone. I mean, I was speaking to a student who's at UCT at the moment a couple of weeks ago, who is, you know, one of the students that feels like it is very radical, the Roads Must Fall movement, and it's borderline, you know, detracting from people going about what they need to do at universities. I mean, what's your take?
So firstly, the idea that this is radical is a problem for me, because for me, this is balancing out the scales. You can't be radical by wanting equality. That's not a radical idea. That is an equality idea. That is centrist, as far as I'm concerned. That is therefore where we should be. We should be in the middle. We should be with everybody on every side being with equal opportunity. So that is not a radical idea. And I don't believe the Roads Must Fall movement is a radical concept at all. I think that it seeks to achieve equality, and therefore it cannot be radical.
It's happening globally.
It is happening globally. So you've got Oxford, who's also got a Roads Must Fall movement happening. They're in solidarity with the students here. And it's about changing the curriculum and decolonizing ideas of education, academia, and what knowledge actually is about. So, I mean, let me give you an example. I retweeted something just a little while ago before I got here, someone explaining about how a white Western anthropologist she was studying anthropology, and she said she's doing this because she wants to go to Zimbabwe to teach women there how to organize. Zimbabwe is one of the most important spaces where black women organized and liberated the country from the firm clutches of colonialism. And they are one of the biggest feminists to look up to in terms of like looking how they in terms of like just moving in their own space, in their own ideas, and liberating the country. These are freedom fighters. And this woman, who was barely out of her teens, decided, okay, she's going to now go learn anthropology so that she can go to Zimbabwe and then tell them how to do things. She's never been in a war herself before. And the woman with guns, with babies, you know, making sure that their people were going to be safe. So this is why the decolonization process is so important, because you've got people who think things like this, who don't actually know what's going on in the world and what has gone on in the world before.
Let's zoom out on the word decolonization then. You know, history will say to you that Africa has been decolonized, but has it?
Why would history say that?
Well, this is what you would learn, a lot of people are learning in school at the moment, is that colonization happened. And then there was decolonization. But clearly, that definition has to change then.
There wasn't decolonization. There was alleged liberation, right?
Yes.
So Liberation.
But you know
is that,
what I'm saying in terms of you pick up a history textbook and this is the tone that you'll get. Is that?
I don't know if that is even the if they use the term decolonization, and if they do, it's completely wrong, because decolonization means the breaking down of a concept. So colonization wasn't just a physical movement; it was also a taking over of ideas.
Yes.
And the hierarchy of exactly, and the hierarchy of what was more important than others.
It was a cultural
obliteration and whitewash. That's exactly what it was, right? So decolonization is the process of undoing all of that. Decolonization is not the process of that stopping.
But this is what I'm saying, is that people throw that term around without really actually questioning what that term
what is. What it actually means. Yeah. And if that is the case, then that's particularly worrying, because if people think that decolonization ended when 1994 came, then they are very mistaken about what decolonization actually means. And decolonization is the breaking down of structures that created a certain idea of
European
who is better
and
who is worse, of who is the one to believe, who is the one not to believe, and who deserves more and who doesn't. And you can find this in different spaces. You can find this in different groupings. In India, there's the caste system. There's a lot of influence from colonization and a lot of stuff that happened there. But the caste system essentially is a grouping of people depending on who belongs and who gets and who doesn't get. That is also problematic. And so the decolonization process happens not to just take away Eurocentric ideas. It is mostly, if not completely, almost completely Eurocentric. But it's breaking down perceptions of who deserves more than other people.
You know what's interesting, and I don't know why it's coming to mind now, but it is, because it's the offshoots that one doesn't necessarily always see of something like this. Is, I mean, Don Laka has been in the news a hell of a lot recently for criticizing Metro FM and South African radio stations, saying that they're playing way too much overseas international music and that we follow way too much Western culture, and that in an African context, South Africa specifically, radio stations play like 20% local music when they should be playing a hell of a lot more. And I think that a lot of the time people don't realize that that is an implication. As much as, you know, rights and everything is implicated, that is another implication. Wearing skinny jeans might be an implication.
Everything you do is influenced by colonization and these ideas.
So what we're proposing here then is that Roads Must Fall is really then an organization that is looking at a complete, well, not reversal, because you can't reverse.
No, it's not a reversal.
So what is it then?
And remember that
it's a cultural change to embrace
the self.
The self.
And the importance of the self. So colonization and globalization are two different things. And it's very important that people don't get those two mixed up. Colonization, like I explained, seeks to create a hierarchy and to explain who then decide and to be the ones to decide
one culture
who deserves
imposed
and who
on everyone else. Yeah.
Globalization is the understanding that all of this is important and all of this needs to be taken into consideration because we live so close to each other and because we can share. Now, when it suits certain people, globalization is used when they can take, you know, technology from parts of Asia and they want to take like parts of culture from Africa, then globalization for them is a very good idea. However, when it comes to colonization, globalization then isn't applied, because then suddenly anyone who lives in Asia or Africa is then barbaric and doesn't know how to live, and they were wearing animal skins and whatever it is.
And I have to tell you that the current perception of a lot of the people in the Roads Must Fall movement would not be, barbaric is a very strong word, but it would be radical, like we were saying. I mean, you recognize that a lot of the image that's being portrayed in South African media, international media, in fact, perhaps more in South African media than international media, is of it being unnecessary almost that this movement exists.
And that is a problem, because you're basically telling people that their feelings and what they believe isn't valid. Saying it's unnecessary, then, because the opposite of unnecessary is necessary, right? So you're saying this is not needed, therefore it shouldn't happen.
Because the counter argument that people are saying is that, but people should just be, we've lost so much time on people getting educated last year with Fees Must Fall. The fees didn't rise. It was a 0% increase or whatever. So we have to now just get people back into universities, writing exams on time. That is the and how do you address that counter argument?
But what knowledge are they getting? They're still getting the same colonized knowledge.
So it's a complete regroup.
It's a complete new way of looking at things. It's about changing the curricula. It's about not studying Shakespeare anymore and studying actual people like Bessie Head who come from this country and from this continent and looking at what is valuable in terms of literature, future, re-looking at where actually the history of, I mean, there are people who believe that white people brought maths into the world. And we know that that's not true if you use Google. Yeah. And you'll figure out that was actually one of the globalized ideas of what happened. And
you would take this and apply to everything from medicine to
every
across the board.
Single thing. You were taught that the father of medicine is one of those Greek people. I don't even remember. Hippocrates or something, because that's where they take the Hippocratic Oath. Medicine never came from the Greeks. That is not true. That is a very untrue perception. So if you do a little bit more research, you figure out that actually medicine, or modern medicine as it is, was a combination of different ideas that came from different spaces because people decided they were going to move throughout the globe, steal their ideas, and then not credit them with it.
What would you say in one line is the manifesto of the Rhodes Must Fall movement? What is the objective in one line?
To decolonize.
Okay.
To decolonize, to reprioritize. And in... this is not a lot to ask for. And you know, you will find older people are really like rejecting these ideas and the way in which people are doing
a lot of the older academics. And I know you take issue with this at UCT and in the country are taking a serious issue with the Rhodes Must Fall movement trying to halt the current university system.
And with allegedly burning things that are very important to us when some people don't believe it's important to us. The thing is that people who are not involved in the Rhodes Must Fall movement cannot say how they must react to anything. The Rhodes Must Fall movement is dealing with state-sanctioned, like state-sanctioned violence. They are police, SAPS police in universities going after students. And they are now students who have to defend themselves from state police. Okay. The equality here is already very clear. You cannot, a student movement cannot compete with a movement and a group that is sponsored by the government to actually keep them in check, in inverted commas. So,
See, but this makes me worried about the rollout of the actual physicality or the manifestation of our constitution, because technically on paper, something like this should not be a problem. People opposing something should not be a problem.
Exactly.
So what's getting lost in translation here?
People decide who gets to, how and in which way it's best to militarize spaces. So using the police is an intimidation tactic, okay? And a lot of the time it's an intimidation tactic that gets taken too far. There are students who have been hit. There are students who have been hurt. There are students who are going to hospital. Women students have been harassed by police and by private security. I mean, there are people in the very fear of their lives. At Northwest University, there were people being shot with rubber bullets. Some people putting pictures on Twitter of live casings, live ammunition. People are coming in there, and these are students who are burning artwork, and they're being fired at, and they're being threatened with their lives and their bodies just for doing something that they believe in. And that is a very big problem. I mean, if we just look at the way in which this is being addressed, and if the older people could just, for once, instead of talking about what is the right way and the wrong way to do things, just for once talk about what is happening first and then decide from there.
I think it's
then just, it is a fairer way of looking at things.
I kind of almost in my head, I see a parent who's just putting their kid through medical school at UCT and they see the stuff on the news of the Rhodes Must Fall movement interrupting class and so on and so forth. And that's how the media is portraying it. And they're probably just thinking to themselves, because that's what they've been exposed to, like, this is unnecessary. That's kind of what I think is happening.
But there are black students who go through this every day. So why is one student's medicine fees more important than an entire population group's well-being and welfare for generations to come? Who decides what's more important and what isn't? And this group is taking action. Yeah. Everyone else is sitting on the sidelines and making points. But if they actually want to take action, they can form their own group and they can actually do something about
it. It's changing the entire university system.
And that is a huge effort. And we should be congratulating them for doing this.
It's a whole lot of new textbooks.
It's going to exactly. It's new textbooks. It's making you consider your own way of life. It is making you reconsider what you thought and how to be, you know, the truth. It's making you more critical. And why aren't you thankful for that?
It's a crazy one. Again, so much of it is to do with the media, though, and how things are portrayed.
And how it's portrayed.
And
this is why students didn't want people from general media coming into their space. Mm. This is why the Rhodes Must Fall movement has been keeping media out intentionally. This is the reason, because so we know that.
Misconstrued.
Exactly. They know what's going on.
All right. It is a Rainbow 16. What is the state of the Rainbow Nation? I'm going to catch my breath here a second. Deshni's always, so you always give me a lot to think about. So when we did our initial, Rainbow 16 special, which is what's inspired our weekly segment, Licia Dewing was somebody that really latched onto what we were saying and wanted to get more involved with Rainbow 16. She's a career strategist, but I think this is fantastic that she reached out when we were doing the special. And so I said to producer Kat, like, I don't even know what this conversation with her is going to be about right now, but whenever somebody wants to engage on these kinds of topics, I think it's very important if we have the platform
Definitely.
For that to happen, for it to do so. So, Licia, what struck a chord with you when we did that initial special?
Ari Deshni, thank you so much for having me. Just to, you know, share a couple of thoughts right Pleasure. Now with you. What struck me was that you had created a platform that clearly was long overdue and needed to be available for South Africans to not only be inspired, but to be able to process all the craziness that was going on at the beginning of the year with the racism and so much that was happening. And I mean, is this not now the year of the students? Is it not the era of the students? And I'm just so excited. And I certainly celebrate everything that they're doing. And politics aside, there's, you know, there's conservatives and there's radicals. And no, is what the students doing, is what they're doing radical? No, it's not. They're galvanizing, they're taking action,
yeah.
and they're making a difference in their futures. And it really just juxtapositions quite a lot with my life work, which as a career strategist is helping to teach people to, you know, identify and connect them to their authentic careers. But essentially, the students' movement is just goosebumpy in terms of their ability to make the country stand up and take notice. So it's not radical, no. I believe that as South Africans, we have a narrative that's very passive.
Mm.
We're all about, sorry, in a restaurant, sorry, you've served me the wrong food, whereas other countries are far more direct, and the French call out for garçon, and Americans just demand satisfaction. So our narrative collectively as a South African nation is passive. And these students are igniting and taking charge where I see most of my work within the corporate South African sector is dealing with corporate, you know, individuals who believe that there is potentially a silver career bullet that, you know, coming around the corner, or an opportunity for, you know, a quick fix, when they really also need to understand that they've got to take charge of their careers. A lot of the time, I feel like I'm trying to ignite rockets, with all due respect, under people to get them to take ownership of changing their careers, or get them to take ownership of the direction of their careers, rather than waiting for the recruiter to call or waiting for the HR department to, you know, select them as preferred talent. So my involvement and my interest with Rainbow 16 is, how can I help? How can I be a part of the narrative? And in my section of focus, my little focus patch, what can I do? And Ari, your segment really started me thinking about what I could actually do. And I've put together, I'm collaborating with David Graham, who's the digital engagement lead for Deloitte Africa, on putting together a series of podcasts just on how to use LinkedIn. Not Wow. how to use LinkedIn the American way, but how to use LinkedIn in a South African context.
Hmm.
So many South Africans aren't really maximizing what LinkedIn is and the power of their connections and what they can do with LinkedIn. And a lot of the information that you get is fantastic, but it comes from an American viewpoint, and they're probably a good couple of years ahead of us. So David and I share a passion to create free information and spread and serve and share South Africans. I think we're both proudly South African, and what we want to do with our work is encourage and help those individuals that we see potentially need the help, but formally potentially might not be able to engage with us in a professional sense, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
Mm. Just to touch on what you were asking, I mean, I'm a digital specialist. I work in digital.
Mm.
I'm a digital editor of Ama Bongani. And I mean, I think one of the most important things just to look at would be, you know, access and information, and like you said, using it in the South African context. But even in the South African context, there are very different groups of people, just like we have with Twitter.
Absolutely.
Just like we have with Facebook. So to be able to galvanize that kind of thing and understand who you're speaking to. And I think in that way, the best thing you could do to help young black people seek out their best performance and their best ways and the best career for them would be to just speak to them about what it is that they want to do outside of what other people tell them to do. And it's a very different conversation to have when you say to someone, what do you want to be? And you know that they've been influenced by TV and they've been influenced by books, and all of these books and TV have come from westernized ideas of where they should be. And you can see this in how entrepreneurs around Africa actually work. There are people who make little beadwork and they make money doing that. And, you know, it's all different and different contexts for each different person. And I think the biggest challenge you might face is trying to get through to someone to converse with you on that level where they can say to you, actually, what I really want to do, what I really, really, really want to do for my community, for myself, for what I want to do would be A, B, and C. And that would be the best way to get the best out of it. I don't really know what else to say.
Definitely, you're absolutely right. And if I can refer to, it's the process of undoing in a way. It's breaking down what there is.
Decolonization.
We're decolonizing the individual. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to use this.
Yeah.
Decolonizing the individual, because it's about the importance of self. Mm-hmm. Self removed from social idealism.
Mm-hmm.
Self removed from everything else. And do you know that there is a statistic, and this covers the full spectrum of South African, you know, people who work.
Mm-hmm.
There is a statistic somewhere, came across my horizon somewhere, that the unmotivated person in a position costs the company thousands and thousands of, obviously the statistic was American, thousands of dollars, because then they're just skating within their KPIs. They're not shooting the lights out. They're not looking at opportunities. They're leaving opportunities on the ground around them all the time.
Yeah.
So my work is to ultimately, my purpose is to fix that, not for the company, but for the individual. Take them and help them identify what it is that will motivate them, what will give them a sense of significance, what will magnetically pull them out of bed in the morning to get them to work, so that they will be in a position of authentic career passion, which is, you know, words powerful that I like to use.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's all quite, you know, in an ideal world, you know, we have to look at work for the sake of a work, you know, jobs that we can earn the skills in order to be able to get to the ideal job.
But I would say use some of our podcasts and speak to them about just what it means to be a person in this world, firstly, and start there.
Yeah,
I don't know.
That's
Ari?
A starting point. Listen, Dicia, we're out of time, but very, very cool. And when you launch that podcast series, please let us know so we can get you on the line to promote that and tell people where they can take a listen. Some powerful words there. That's Alicia doing their career strategist, doing some unbelievable work. Deshni, we got to wrap this up. And I mean, we touched on Roads Must Fall. A lot of our conversation centered on that, but then also zooming out, because Roads Must Fall, the brand image of that is a lot of people still think it's about a statue and it's a radical group. So just in a nutshell, what should people reconsider in terms of their view of the Roads Must Fall movement? What would you urge them to really reevaluate?
Reevaluate yourself. Reevaluate your own ideas of what you think radical is. Reevaluate what you think violence is. Because as yet, the only kind of violence I've ever seen from the Roads Must Fall movement is from the police. And that's my honest opinion. Violence is not someone setting fire to something. Violence for me is when someone's leg is broken by someone hitting them with the back of a gun.
Oh my God,
that is violence. That violence is not trying to make a statement because you're angry. And just reevaluate your opinions, reevaluate yourself, and take yourself out of the situation. It's not about you. Nobody cares about how you feel. You are not part of the movement and you are not part of the situation. Think about the people who are there.
There you go. That's Deshni Subramani there from Amabongani, the investigative journalism unit of the Mail and Guardian. It's D Shroom on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
She will fight with you.
Mm-hmm.
But she will also say when she thinks that you are right or whether you're wrong. She will be honest with you in terms of her opinions. Deshni Subramani, thank you so much. That's Rainbow 16. Kelman on CliffCentral.com.